It's the 18th of February 2009, and I'm in Dunedin, in Otago, in New Zealand. And with me is the Reverend John Sinclair, who's agreed to talk with me today about his life and his reading experiences across his lifetime. Can I thank you very much, first of all, Reverend, for agreeing to do that. We're actually in your church, which is a very historic church in Dunedin, First Church. And we'll hear a bit about that, I imagine, as we go along. But could you tell me, first of all, when you were born and where you were born?
I was born in Dunedin. My parents both come from Orkney. They were married in Dunedin, and that would be I was born in 1933.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. In Dunedin then, and yet I do detect that your voice is very, well, it has a Scottish intonation.
Yes. If I came home from school as a small boy and said I saw a brown cow down the road, I was told that's not the way English is spoken.
Now, did your parents both come from Orkney?
Yes. Right. Mother, on both sides of her family, from the island of Westray. My father was born in Kirkwall, but his people really came from Caithness. My mother tended to look down on my father because he was a incomer.
Right.
Though she was born in Dumbarton because her father's ship, and he was a ship's master, and was at Dumbarton at the time.
Right. So that's quite an interesting background then.
Yeah.
And a bit of moving around. Now, you said your parents married here in Dunedin. Did they meet here in Dunedin?
They met in Orkney, where my mother's parents had retired. They had been farming in Australia at one part of it, but he retired as Commodore of the Australian Commonwealth Line about 1924, and built a house in St. Ola, overlooking Scapa Flow. He was a very stern man, her father, who, as an old sailing ship captain, had no time for marine engineers and regarded them as the scum of the earth. And my father, being a marine engineer, he wouldn't meet him or have him in the house or anything. And eventually my father got work in New Zealand with the Union Steamship Company of New Zealand, and he sent a cable over to my mother, would she come out to New Zealand and marry him. So she was in a perplexing situation. She discussed it with her mother, and her mother said, well, you can't keep the man waiting, you'll have to give him some reply. So she sent back a cable in reply, simply, in the language of the time, sure thing, kid. And came out to New Zealand and was married here in Dunedin.
She was quite brave then.
Ah, yes. But then she had been round the world a couple of times beforehand with her father in the sailing ship, twice around Cape Horn in a sailing ship.
So you think she caught the bug then?
Oh, no, it wasn't a bug. She would have been happy to have stayed in Orkney.
Really?
Yes.
And did she ever settle here then?
Oh, yes. She went home again after 40 years for a holiday and enjoyed that greatly. Yes.
And what about your father? Did he ever go back?
He never got back. He was left an orphan at the age of 6. And really had to make his own way in life. And he wanted to be an artist, but he had to become an engineer in order to make a living. And first went to sea as a junior engineer on the old Port Lincoln during the Great War, carting troops and munitions across the Channel.
What decided him on New Zealand? Was it the job or the place?
The place. He was sailing with the Union Company between here and Calcutta. and first sailed up Otago Harbour early one Sunday morning when the place was just magic, and decided that if ever the opportunity offered to settle ashore, he would try and make it Dunedin. So that's how it came about.
So, well, the picturesqueness obviously appealed to him, and the size of the harbour, that's very impressive. But would it have been the Scottishness of the place too that might have appealed?
He met quite a lot of Scottish people here in Dunedin, and they became firm friends. So that they were married at the house of some of these friends. In fact, when my mother came out, she came by train from from Lyttelton to Dunedin, and Father had about six or eight people stationed along the length of the platform, so that when she got off the train, knowing nobody, there would be people looking for her.
Were they Scottish people?
For the most part, yes. That strong Scottishness in Dunedin has diminished markedly since then.
I've heard that. Now, did you have brothers and sisters?
A younger sister and a younger brother, yes.
So you're the oldest child.
Yes.
And I know how that feels, so am I.
Now,
can you recall in your house, was it in the centre of Dunedin, by the way, or near the port?
Well, before I was born, my mother was living with a family in Mornington. She had a single room. And those people took over the lease of what is called Cargill's Castle and ran that place as cabaret. And mother went with them and had a room in the tower of Cargill's Castle. And before I was born, she moved down from the top of the hill at St. Clair down to a larger flat right on the coast, the sea beach there. So we lived there for a while. Father was still at sea and only home two or three weekends a year. Then we lived nearer the centre of town for a while. Later, out in Anderson's Bay, a seaside suburb. That was the first time my father had lived in a colonial house. It had it was a 1920s bungalow, but the walls were lined with timber and scrim, and the newspaper on top of the scrim. But the scrim was loose on the walls, and he reckoned that when the wind blew, it pushed the bed out into the middle of the room. From there we went to a house in Every Street, a lovely brick house. At that time my father was a shift an engineer at the Dunedin Public Hospital. And during the war, about 1941, we shifted to Timaru, where he went to recommission the old Timaru Harbour dredge, which was required to deepen the harbour for all the shipping in wartime. And we lived in Timaru for about 6 or 7 years and came back to Dunedin 1950. And they remained here for the rest of their lives.
So where are your formative memories then, your first memories?
The earliest memories are of a house in Manor Place, the second home. I have no recollection of living at St. Clair when we were there. The main memories would be in Anderson's Bay, where
it's
started
just the colonial
school.
House.
Yes, a large school. About a third of the children came from two large orphanages that were in that same district.
Now those children in the orphanages, had they come from overseas?
No, they would all be New Zealanders.
in your house in Anderson's Bay then, can you recall books?
Oh, books. And you're wanting to get round to the books that I most remember.
I know you've made a list. That's always
good. One of the ones I particularly remember was a book on Leonardo da Vinci, published by Whitcomb and Toombs. Now, that was a New Zealand publishing firm that specialised in books for children, some of which were used in school, others you bought. And that was quite significant. My father had got together a library of that included a set of Dickens and a child's history of England by Dickens was quite important. He also subscribed to a thing that came out every week, Shipping Wonders of the World, and that was significant in our understanding of the background of both parents being seafarers, as it were, on both sides. And he also had a keen interest in art and had a thick book of the world's greatest paintings, which we were thoroughly acquainted with. The book was so designed that you came to the title of the picture and then you turned that page over and there was the picture, and we had to learn who the artist was and what the picture was before the page was turned over. So we're well acquainted with the best of art in that way.
Would that be European art?
My
European art. The pictures.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That's old, right. Masters.
Old masters. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yes. About 1941, we shifted to Timaru and lived just a block away from the public library. And that was a very good thing. There I found Arthur Ransom and read all his books. And there also, in that library, I first became acquainted with New Zealand writings. And the chief one was a book that I've, a thick book, which I've read about five times, a biography of Julius von Haast by his son, Heinrich Ferdinand von Haast. And that has been very influential in my reading. Von Haast was an Austrian geologist who came to New Zealand and did a lot of exploration work in mainly in the South Island, and lived in Christchurch and took an active part in community life, and it really opened my eyes to many things. And it's still a book that I go back to.
Do you own it now?
Oh, I own it now, yes. I've owned it for a long time.
So what did it open your eyes to?
An awareness of the New Zealand environment, geology, literature, yeah, that mainly, and cultured living.
So this book, because I'm not familiar with it, is like a sort of almanac of New Zealand then?
It's quite strictly a biography of this man
and
his interests.
I understand.
Yes.
Hey, did your parents bring any books with them? when no. they came here. Mm.
Except engineering textbooks, mm-hmm. almost, mm-hmm. One of which is quite important and which I still read. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Oh.
I just wondered if they had, because it's sometimes very particular books that people bring when they migrate, for example.
My mother bought her father's book called Before the Mast and Sailing Ships, John Mason. Mm-hmm. He had written, I think, three other books that I haven't ever been able to track down. Mm-hmm. Your university might help me on that matter.
Well, they might.
There were things like A Young Mate's Companion to Seamanship, mm-hmm. or something like that. Mm-hmm. I would like to know just what it was like. Nobody has ever discovered it.
It'll be out there somewhere, I'm sure.
I'm sure Glasgow should be able to come to light with it.
Were your parents readers then?
Yes, yes. Mm. But library books were the mainstay, mainly for financial reasons. Mm-hmm. A weekly trip to the library on a Friday night was a pattern of life for years.
Mm-hmm. Now, was that the library in Timaru, or can you remember using the one here in Dunedin?
The one here in Dunedin we didn't use so much, because it meant quite a long trip to get to it. But in Timaru and in Dunedin again, when we came back to Dunedin, that would be the pattern. Yes.
Now, you would have been what age when you moved to Timaru then?
Form one at school, that would be probably 10. Mm. Yes.
So the right age for Arthur Ransom then?
Ah, yes, that quite appealed.
Can you remember any other storybooks from before that time that you maybe were given as gifts? Sunday school prizes?
Yes, there was one that Coppin of Buckland, I think it was called, but I never read it.
Was that a Sunday school prize?
It was. It was a sea story of some sort, but. Mm-hmm. Novels of the sea have never appealed over much.
Right.
Uh-huh. And novels don't feature much in my reading taste. Mm. I've read a few, but not many.
Mm. Ah, well then, it'll be interesting to see what you have read of that. So, you didn't really own any books or a lot of books as a small child?
We had this basic library, which I suppose would account for about 2, 4, 6 meters of shelf space. Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's quite a bit.
It's quite a bit. Mm.
Now, you mentioned the book about Leonardo.
Yes.
And that you were, that was significant for you. What
yes.
was that?
It opened my eyes to the work of an artist and the work of an architect. Mm. And the difficulties they faced. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that was intriguing for you then?
Yes, it was interesting. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other book you mentioned with the colour plates of old masters.
Yes.
Were you encouraged to read that? Or to look at it?
We went to the public art gallery about once every 2 months, which was a long trek on a Sunday afternoon by tram and on foot for several miles. And in between times, our interest in art was fostered by father sitting in the chair and us sitting on the arm of the chair and having to guess what was coming.
So was that a fun thing for you to do?
It was an interesting thing, yes. Yes.
Looking back on it now, do you think it was a good thing for you?
Oh, yes. Mm. And in part, it reflected my father's interest in art and antiques and his concern that we should appreciate those sort of things. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did he ever encourage you to read anything at all about where he'd come from and your mother had come from?
We had a book called Orkney, the Magnetic North by, I think, a man named Gunn. Mm. And that book was on our shelves, and we became familiar with it over the years, but he never spoke about his family background, and to this day I don't know much about it.
Really?
Mm. His father died of TB when he was quite young, and his mother, I've just recently discovered, was left, had to make her way in life as a charwoman, and she married a man shepherd and went to live in Canada and went out of my father's life. Mm-hmm. And he was brought up by his mother's mother in Kirkcaldy, in pretty impoverished circumstances. He had to go to school with no shoes and all that sort of thing. And
he did rather well for himself then, really.
Well, I think he did. Mm-hmm. I think he did very well.
And he made his home here then, would you say?
Yes.
And your mother too?
Yes, here in Dunedin.
Now, did newspapers come into your house as a child?
The Orcadian. From time to time, and my birth was recorded in the Orcadian, but not in the Otago Daily Times, which is probably significant.
Yes.
We've always had the daily paper. I can remember my mother reading it on the floor of our living room at the time the Japanese were invading China, and they were shooting patients in the Shanghai hospital. And that sort of stuck in my mind quite vividly. I've since tracked down the events of that time and find my memory is not at fault. That's what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
That would be in the late 30s. But we've always taken the newspaper and read it.
It was the local newspaper.
Yes, Dunedin, yes.
Where would your parents have got the Orcadian from?
Came out by mail, and I still get it in monthly bundles from a lady in Methven in mid-Canterbury.
So someone was sending that then to your parents?
Yeah, on occasion. It wasn't regular, just one that they thought might interest her.
Mm. Now, were you ever intrigued and sought to read about your parents' heritage in any way?
Well, we had my grandmother's father's obituary, which was interesting as a sea captain, and that was in the Orcadian, and also the obituaries of some of the other relations, being my mother's uncles and whatnot, who had all been seafarers for the most part and involved in the First World War. My grandfather was naval vice consul in Havana in Cuba during the Great War. That's where he ended up. So we did pick up something of the heritage there, but that generation in New Zealand, my father and mother didn't tend to talk a great deal about heritage as heritage. Yeah.
So they didn't join any of the Scottish societies that were around Otago at that time?
No. And there was actually an Orkney and Shetland Society, but they never belonged to it. For one thing, a seafarer tends not to put down roots in a community, and this meant that they didn't join much, school or anything like that, school committees, that type of thing. So, and my father only joined one thing, and that was the Friends of the Otago Museum. Right. He was interested in that type of thing.
Yes, it seems, yes. It seems so. Now, what kind of education did you have here then, Reverend?
In Timaru, I was at a very good primary school for 2 years. And there we learned a good appreciation of poetry and whatnot at that level. And then I was 4 years at Timaru Boys High School, and that was a very good school. And again, we were introduced to many things, but I do remember, as well as New Zealand poetry coming to the fore at that stage, we had to do a project on a New Zealand author, and for some reason or other, I lighted on the name of a man called Heris Beattie, who specialised in local history, particularly Maori history and the early exploration of Otago and Southland, and Run Holden and all that sort of thing. And those things have been of dominant interest and remain so till this day. Just yesterday we were away in central Otago tracking down one of the old coach roads that seems to have been forgotten. And all this sort of thing I can trace back to this man, Heris Beattie, and his numerous publications.
Yeah. Now, what was the balance then in your education, particularly in your secondary education, between that kind of literature, written about New Zealand by New Zealanders, and English literature from the canon?
We had to struggle with Shakespeare, and I don't think when you're young and haven't much experience in life that adult poetry necessarily rings very true. You can memorize it, but the worth of the memorizing only becomes important as you've experienced more life. So that would be my answer to that question.
I think that's how you weren't that impressed by it.
No.
At the time.
And when I got to university, I was even less impressed by the way academic English people, English literature people, analysed things and read what I'm sure was never intended to be read out of things.
Now, what about Scottish literature? Because that seems to be part of the education system here too.
Well, that was secondary school. No, secondary school also introduced me to history. See, I set out high school with the intention of becoming a civil engineer, and I didn't grasp mathematics in any significant way. So my bent then turned to what they call social studies, history and geography. And that's where I found I was much more at home. So that was became the balance of things, with French as well, which I appreciated more than English literature. Yeah.
So you didn't have any of the Scottish canon in your literature studies then? I'm thinking of Robert Burns, of course.
No.
Walter Scott.
No, you must remember that to some Scots people, Robert Burns is just a dirty old man. And that was my mother's view of him. And not that she was a purist or Puritan or whatever you might call it, but that was her impression. Father never bothered about him at all.
And you didn't get any of it at school then?
Nothing that's has sunk in any way.
Right.
Yes.
And what about the likes of the novels of Walter Scott? They were very popular in the school curriculum in the UK.
Tales of a Grandfather. Mm-hmm. Yes. But that only.
That's all.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that I picked up in a small book. But that actually triggered a lifelong interest in Scottish history.
Mm-hmm. Right, so what types of books then did you read about? If you go back to your beginnings of the interest in Scottish history, what sort of things got you interested?
Well, Tales of a Grandfather, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Orkney background didn't ever become real until much later in life. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the kinds of things you'd get to read about Scottish history, would they be given to you at school, or was that part of your
own?
Oh,
didn't come into any school curriculum at all, mm-hmm. as far as I know.
So what was the history you got at school?
Oh, English history, the Reform movement, a blank. Mm-hmm. It was interesting, but it's left me mm-hmm. as to what the detail was mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it couldn't have put you off.
Anyway. No, it didn't put me off. Uh-huh. Secondary school history, when I came to Dunedin for my last year at school, mm-hmm. secondary school, at Otago Boys High School, we had a very good history master, mm-hmm. a man who had written books, mm-hmm. and there were only six in the history class, mm-hmm. and we had individual tuition from this mm-hmm. excellent man, McClymont was his name. English, or Macaulay's History of England, especially the 18th century, mm-hmm. that became an important thing. Mm-hmm. And then there was European history in the 18th century as well. Mm-hmm. That became important. Mm-hmm. You want me to get into university?
Yes. What age were you when you left school?
I'd be 17 when I left.
Did you go straight to university?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And yes. Which university was that?
Otago, of course. Uh-huh. The first university in New Zealand. Uh-huh. Yes.
Had you no desire to go anywhere else? Were you happy to stay?
Well, it wasn't even a possibility. Mm. My father had actually taken a lower paid job to be able to shift from Timaru back to Dunedin so that the three of us would have the opportunity of a university education because he'd had no opportunities. So he made all these sacrifices in order that these opportunities should be open to us.
Who would you say then was the biggest influence on your reading taste then as a child and as an adolescent?
My father, probably. He had engaged in a correspondence course with Wolseley Hall in Oxford. And his notes mm-hmm. in connection with that I had for many years. That would be an indication that he valued education mm-hmm. and was determined that we shouldn't waste our opportunities. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that would be the way I'd answer that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that kind of respect for education and a keenness to have an education and carry on learning is often thought of as very stereotypically a Scottish attribute.
Oh, of course, you're not wrong. Mm. This province was founded by the Lay Association of the Free Church of Scotland, mm-hmm. and their prime emphasis was on good education, proper provision for the church, and the development of an ordered community life with good industry and commerce and farming and whatnot. And the proof of that, I think, you find in the fact that within 20 years of stepping ashore on the mud at the bottom of this hill here, they had established 68 primary schools right into the back corner of the province. They'd established a boys' high school, modelled on the Edinburgh High School. Even the building looked a bit the same as the old one.
And was that then the Otago Boys High?
No, that was the Otago Boys High. And then a girls' high school, one of the first in the British Commonwealth. And within 20 years they had appointed the first four professors for the university and got the university up and running.
So do you feel yourself in any way a part of that, that heritage?
Well, it's in line with my father's standards. My mother never had the opportunities of much in the way of education because she was brought up in Australia. Her father wanted to be a farmer and combined it with seafaring. And so her education was in a small school in Gippsland. She was the ducks, but she was the only one in the class. Nevertheless, when she got back to Scotland at the beginning of the First World War, she found a job in the Clydesdale Bank in Glasgow, one of the first women to work in the bank. So she was no fool. And it was she who had a good knowledge of poetry and literature and could bring out quotations to suit on occasion, yes.
Do you recall any of the poetry and literature which she was interested in?
Oh.
Maybe made an impression on you.
I can't recall the context of them, they're just odd phrases, you know. Dad and never called me mother. It's a better thing that I do now than I've ever done before, Sydney Carton and Tale of Two Cities, that's right. Yeah. That sort of thing rolled off her tongue.
Did you ever read any of the Dickens, by the way, that were on your family's bookshelf?
No, the print was small. And it didn't appeal, and Charles Dickens has never appealed to me greatly. I've read some of them, but
Before we move on to your university career, could I just ask you about the swallows in Amazon, and if there's anything else you can remember about the kind of recreational reading that you did out of the library?
I can't recall. No.
That one, though, obviously must have.
Well, that triggered it because at that stage we were living right by the waterfront in Timaru, and yachts and things were all around the place, and I still have a yacht in a place just over the hill at Doctor's Point. Yeah.
So was that what appealed then, that the adventure?
Oh, well, my father used to be the starter for the Kirkwall Yacht Club, so yeah.
The thing about the Ransom stories is they are very, very English.
Yes.
Did that?
I'm not prejudiced against the English. But I'm more at home as Scots.
Are you?
Yes.
But it didn't stop you. You didn't feel in any way alienated from them because they are.
Our next door neighbours in Anderson's Bay were Quakers from Yorkshire. And we slowly came to grips with the Yorkshire attitude to life. I won't say any more than that. We also had people from Ulster near at hand, and we became well and truly acquainted with their attitudes to life too. Yeah.
Dunedin anyway is very, very cosmopolitan.
It is now.
Yeah.
It was more homogeneous 50 years ago and more.
Homogeneous in what way?
In the sense that there weren't many Maoris, not many Chinese. There were some Jewish people. But after the last war, there's been an influx of people from the Pacific Islands. The Maoris have come south in large numbers. Chinese component in the population is more dominant. The Lebanese one is more dominant. It's a quite different society now. If you go down our main street, you might see as many non-Europeans as you will Europeans.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So you mean homogenous, and it was British? Yes, across the board.
Yes.
Did you get much history about the Maoris?
Yes, that was well and truly covered at school.
Was it?
Yes, well and truly. And if people researched properly, they'd discover that that was the case from an early stage.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Did that make any impression on you at the time?
Oh, we grew up familiar with stories about Te Rauparaha and Honiahiki and that sort of thing, yes. Again, Whitcomb and Toombs published a series of books called Our Nation's Story, and that included British history, Maori history, more contemporary New Zealand history. It was quite good. It's spurned by the purists these days, but it was actually a well-rounded historical background, I thought.
And was that a school textbook?
Or yes.
It was?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Okay, well, you went to university here. You went to study engineering.
It
didn't work out.
No, I gave up engineering at high school. And I began university with the intention of becoming a secondary school teacher. So I did English, history, geography, economics, philosophy, that group of subjects. And then later on, I decided that I could go into the ministry, and then I had to wrestle with Greek and Hebrew. And that wrestle, I never really won. No.
So that was 2 degrees then you did to do one.
I did an arts degree, specialising in history and geography, and then part of a BD, and a diploma in theology. Yes.
Now that's a lot of reading. You must have done
Yes.
quite a long time in education.
I was 8 years around the university and enjoyed every minute of it. Yes.
Never thought of an academic career then?
I wasn't that clever. I enjoyed life too much. Yes.
Were your parents a member of this church?
No, my mother used to go to church. My father was never a member of any church.
Really?
Yeah. But his Scottish education had given him a knowledge of the Shorter Catechism. And he could tell you what man's chief end was. And yes, but that was learned in day school.
Did you have a copy of that catechism?
Oh, we were given it at Sunday school.
Do you know happy memories of Sunday school private, Reverend?
I didn't specialise in Sunday school or Bible class, no.
So what decided you then on a career in the ministry?
Well, when I started university, the student Christian movement was a very lively group of people. And before the university year began, or as it began, some of the older members of the SCM used to visit precious, and invite them to go on a hike up Signal Hill and roundabout and back again. And I found that not uncongenial and gradually became involved and closely involved with the student Christian movement. And it was through that that I became a member of the church and eventually a theological student, or divinity student, I'd prefer to be called.
That's very Scottish.
That's right. Yeah.
Was there anything at all that you read at that time that particularly impressed you and made you turn towards that kind of...
No particular book. But there was a small study book, just a slender thing by a Dunedin man, J.M. Bates, called Foundation Truth. And that was just a series of studies. And that appealed to me and made me think, together with the people that I was mixing with, rather than a book. That would be true to say. It was some study books and the community in which I found myself, more than something literary.
Was that community ecumenical then?
Yes, very much so. Presbyterians, High Anglicans, Quakers. The Catholics had their own group in those days. And there was also a more conservative Christian group called the Evangelical Union. So I had the benefit of a fairly liberal ecumenical group of people.
You must have made a decision somehow about Presbyterianism then.
Oh yes, I could have become an Anglican without any trouble. But I decided that Presbyterianism would be the one that I would opt for eventually.
Is there any particular reason for that that would have to do with your background or theological choice that you made?
Yes, I thought so. Yes, I had nothing against the Anglicans, but I thought the other was more soundly based.
I just wondered if it was somehow more familiar to you, because this is a Scottish
It had, I had some background in it. Instead of going to Bible class, I struck a bargain with my mother that I would go to church instead, because you didn't have to answer questions like that. And I actually cottoned on to a lot of things through good preaching of the day.
I see. Yeah. So that would be quite, you'd be quite young then when you
started say going to church. 16.
That's an impressionable age. And it was this church you came to?
No. We were living up in the morning, and well, we went to Roslyn Church at that time. I have been going to church in Timaru as well, but
And was your father quite happy about that career choice?
Oh, he always wanted me to be a doctor. But there was a murder in the hospital. One of the house surgeons murdered another, and that put him off. Never heard any more about medicine after that.
Well, I suppose it's only the vicar, isn't it, in Agatha Christie novels who...
That's right.
The murder.
That's right, yeah.
Did you have time? You must have done an awful lot of reading, serious reading, over your 8 years of study. Is there anything that stands out from that particular
of the university part? There would be some, without going into course details and that sort of thing, the writings of Bonhoeffer and Kierkegaard and Carl Jung would stand out.
And they're quite radical thinkers.
Well, that's right. But I've also developed a taste in biography and that sort of thing. Alexander White, of Free St. George's, Alexander Carlyle of Inveresk, Jupiter Carlyle, J.S. Blackie, Hugh Miller, the mason, stonemason who became a geologist and intimately tied up with the disruption.
Yes, that must be why it rings a bell.
Those people I've read and reread and enjoyed. But
now, the whole history of the disruption, I have always found quite difficult to read myself. It's complicated.
Yes, it is not straightforward.
Is there anything that made it clearer for you that you ever read?
Well, I really only tackled the disruption seriously when I came here. And when I retired, I came here for a Sunday or two, and the minister asked me, would I like to help out preaching on occasions and maybe visiting sick and elderly people, no more than 4 hours a week. I thought, oh, that's all right, I can manage that. But then, not long afterwards, he said, we're doing up this place as a heritage centre, will you look after that? And that really meant I had to come to grips with the disruption and everything going before and after that. So it was that that made me really consider. I knew about it before that. You can't study church history and not. But it wasn't to the fore of my understanding of things, not at all.
Now that's interesting, really.
On the other hand, Martin Luther and his the book on him, Here I Stand, I can't remember the title of the author now, but it was a thick book, and that appealed to me, as well as a smaller book on Luther, that was important. And one or two other books on Scottish history prior to the disruption.
Can you recall what they were?
Offhand, I can't. I've often wondered what they were.
it's not easy, so I take it you don't own any of these books. You must have borrowed them.
Ah, yes. Well, you see, living in Knox College for 4 years, there was a very good library there, open to us day and night.
Now, where is Knox College?
Up in Opahoe, here in Dunedin. It's a college that was set up 100 years ago this year to house students of all faculties, so that divinity students would rub shoulders with everybody else. And that was the pattern of life. Really, you had the privilege of being able to live there.
Never. Did you live there, or did you stay at home?
I lived in for 4 years. And there was a very good library there, the best of everything was there, so it was all on hand. Yes.
Did you carry on using the public library at all?
Not at that time, except to borrow records.
So what kind of records?
Albert Schweitzer, playing the organ, mainly. We didn't have, we only had basic amplifier thing in our study in those days, housed in an apple box or something like that. Yes, we were quite poverty stricken. Yes.
Really? Now, you're not a man for fiction?
No, I've read a few novels just.
What would they be?
Oh, 1984 and Franz Kafka. A professor of church history who was a refugee from Germany in 1938, and he gave a course each year in literature. He would take one piece of literature, like a novel of Franz Kafka's or Dostoevsky, and lecture on it through the winter. And the students from the medical school would sneak in to be part of these lectures.
Mr. They were popular, then.
Yes, they were very, very good. And that opened our minds to the whole realm of existentialism, which was very useful. It really was. So we had to read novels.
Right.
Yes.
And so you read those ones?
Dostoevsky, Kafka, Chekhov, things that were of some substance, yes.
So, were you ever inclined to read the likes of Sartre then, if you were interested in...
I've looked at it, but I've never felt inclined. On the other hand, Sartre's thinking, I've dabbled a bit in that type of thing, yes.
When you say dabbled, would that be reading things about Sartre?
Yes, probably, yes.
So you go into the library and pick up your records and just bypass all these novels.
I have to confess that. Yes.
You're never tempted for something a bit lighter.
Ah, there was enough to read of ordinary study, set books and all that sort of thing. Yes.
Did you carry on reading the newspaper then, once you'd moved out of
school? Into the college? Mm. Yes, first thing in the morning, before anybody messed it up.
All right, so it was supplied for you?
Yes, that's right.
And which newspaper would that be?
The Otago Daily Times, yes.
Have you never wavered from that across your life?
Oh, there's not much choice. I mean, it's not Britain, don't forget. Yes.
Would you like more choice?
Not if it's like some of the other ones that are floating around, all out of one publishing house. Otago Daily Times is an independently owned thing, and
it's not a bad newspaper.
Quite superior.
Yes. But it is quite local.
That's deliberate. That's deliberate.
Yeah. So what about things?
They publish once a week. A supplement on affairs outside of New Zealand, which puts all the other newspapers in New Zealand in the shade.
Yes, I've seen that. It's quite good. Where would you get then world news on a daily or a weekly basis other than that?
No. Well, the local community station broadcast BBC World Service from 11 at night until 6 in the morning.
Right.
So that by the time 6 in the morning comes, I've heard already what the news is going to be.
So it's by other media then that...
Yes,
that
you, yeah. That you get. And we watch BBC television.
Do you ever use... your computer, which I see there.
I've no great love of computers. No.
You never took to them?
No. Mind you, I've never had any instruction in using them. I've just worn them out.
Because I've spoken to other people here who will consult other newspapers, newspapers.
Yes, yes.
Online.
Yes.
Not necessarily just British.
Well, you get the Spectator every week. From the Book Bus.
Right.
And the Country Life magazine and the Scots, Scottish Field.
Right. Do you read them?
And I buy the Scots magazine.
Do you?
Yes.
Now, why is that? What's appealing about the Scots magazine?
It's got a variety of things, and I don't always read all of it, but it's a useful library to have. They're not too big and they're easily accommodated. If you were to see my study, all the walls right up to the ceiling are lined with books, even across the windows.
I've missed that, unfortunately.
And that's only a little part of the garage that's been cut off, you see. And then there's another bookcase in the living room, which is full of New Zealand history. And there's another bookcase just inside the front door which has all the big books.
Right.
Like the Provincial Gazette from the 1860s and that sort of thing.
The Spectator. is a particular political bent.
Oh, yes. And we get the Literary Review.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My daughter from up in Wellington sends that down, mm-hmm. along with The Economist.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. So they're all coming into the house uh-huh. at the present time. And my wife, especially if she finds a good review in The Spectator, we request the book from the book bus and get it very quickly, as a rule.
Now, you mentioned the book bus there. Tell me about the
book bus. The public library has, I think, a couple of book buses mm-hmm. which go to each suburb mm-hmm. once a week. And you just go there and you can borrow from what they've got on the shelves, or you mm-hmm. can request.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have to pay for borrowing the likes of The Spectator?
Spectator maybe 50 cents or something mm-hmm. like that.
Mm-hmm. And then
she does the selecting, and I don't do that. she pays these things.
And then you give them back then?
Yes.
You're finished with them?
You've got them for 3 weeks, except Spectators might be for a week you're allowed to.
But the Scots magazine then you buy?
I buy from a shop. Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. So that's a local shop?
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
It's the one thing I haven't seen since I've been here. I've seen The People's Friend.
Yes, yeah.
And
that came into our house as children. But
did it? Uh-huh.
I didn't read it.
No. Never Annie S. Swan, never appeal. I take it with your mother, then.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
But I must say, over the years, I've cut out some of the pictures from the front cover.
Right. Oh, why is that?
Oh, the appeal places uh-huh. I've been to, uh-huh. Lake Edmund, Teeth, and all yeah, these sorts
uh-huh.
of things.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Now, when did you first go to Scotland?
I only went once mm-hmm. in 1985 on study leave.
Mm-hmm.
For 69 days.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that?
I enjoyed every minute, except about 10.
Uh-huh.
And that was on a train going from Edinburgh to Glasgow one Saturday morning. And I hadn't realised it was
that.
A football special.
Oh, right.
And I got in the carriage and I thought, heavens, there's not even lights in it. And the luggage racks had been gone and there were just seats. And then the thing filled up with all sorts of hooligans. And the worst, going into that tunnel under, before you come up into mm-hmm. Queen Street mm-hmm. Station, the thing stopped in total darkness. I thought, heavens, how am I going to get out of this place? But, yeah.
Now, I hope that wasn't near the start of your trip.
It was during it somewhere, I can't remember where.
It might have made a bad impression.
Oh, no. Once I realised what I was up against, I was all fine, yeah, but I...
Do you think they were more ferocious somehow, the Scottish football fan, than say, the New Zealand rugby fan?
I've never been to a rugby match in New Zealand. I'm not a sporting person.
Right. That would have been my next question to ask you.
I once watched a match from what they call the Scotsman's Grandstand up on the hill at Carisbrook.
The Scotsman's Grandstand?
Yes.
Oh, now why is it called that?
Just a bank where you didn't have to pay.
Oh.
The railway line was sort of right beside you. But that's been closed off by the building of a new stand. So it hasn't... Sport as such has never appealed to me in any significant way.
Before you went to Scotland then on this study leave,
yes.
which I take would have been based in Edinburgh, wasn't it?
Well, based in Glasgow.
Was it?
Because I'd never met any relations.
Mm. Mm.
And my two cousins lived in Newton Mayons.
Mm.
Yeah. So I started from there.
Right.
And then went to... Oh, quite early in the piece I went to the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland in Edinburgh. And I had a week at St Andrews at the Summer School of Theology. And then 7 days up in Orkney. And I met relations and people and that sort of thing. It was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you read up anything about what you were going to see before you,
oh,
you
yes,
went?
I did. The Shell Guide to Scotland.
Uh-huh.
And I had kept maps and that sort of thing mm-hmm. with me. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what about when you were over there? Did you visit any bookshops? Or
oh, Jameson, and I was fairly familiar with the ones on the railway stations, mm-hmm. and in St Andrews, and up in Orkney, yeah.
So are you more versed after that experience where your parents came from?
Oh yes, mm. yes. Because mm-hmm. I was meeting some of their cousins mm. and that sort of gives you a different slant on the people mm. you've known. mm. Yes. Mm.
Did you bring any books back?
Too many. Too many.
I know the feeling.
Yes. But I already had a good collection of books, like I have a shelf full of books on Orkney mm. that I've gathered up from all over the mm-hmm. place. Mm-hmm. And likewise Scotland generally and England.
To a lesser degree. Those books about Orkney, would they be factual books?
Yes. Oh, and
any of the poetry? Or
Mackay, what's his name?
George.
George Mackay Brown, mm. that's right, mm. yeah, that's right. Mm. That sort of thing.
Yeah. What do you think about him then?
Oh, it's all right. Mm-hmm. What's his name? Rendell. Not William Rendell, the poet. I was familiar with his work mm. and. Oh, the first name escapes me. Mm-hmm. He may, in fact, have been a very distant relation. Mm-hmm. That's by the way. Yeah.
And you've kept all in these books.
Yes, oh yes. Yeah.
Is there anything that springs to mind particularly that you brought back from Scotland that you may not have come across here?
Well, things like the Museum of. Oh, what's the one in Portsmouth? The Naval Museum mm. there in Greenwich. Mm. I thought Greenwich mm. and the mm. museum there a highlight of the trip. Mm. Yes, mm. architecturally and in every other way. Mm. Other books that, in particular. Hmm. Oh, there's a book on Mrs. Cranston's tea rooms.
Uh-huh. In Glasgow.
In Glasgow. I've been interested in Mackintosh mm-hmm. and his work and have his biography mm-hmm. on hand. My reading as an adult mm. would feature these fields, the likes of engineering. Mm. I'm very fond of the biographies of Brunel and Telford mm. and the Stevensons mm. and a number of others like that, mm. naval architects and that sort of person. I read what I can in the way of marine engineering and shipbuilding mm. of the older sort. Mm-hmm. Railway engineering, the books of O.S. Knock, mm-hmm. Quite a lot in geology mm-hmm. and weather and climate change. As you've picked already, a large interest in New Zealand history. Mm-hmm. I'm president of the Friends of the Hocken Collections, that's the big
yes,
research there. Library yeah. down there, and we've just finished producing a new book mm. on everything connected with the Otago between Captain Cook and 1839. Mm. Mm-hmm. We've got to sell 500 copies,
right.
So the Napier University really needs one.
Better buy one. That's a bit of a labour of love then.
Well, I didn't have anything to do with the actual production mm-hmm. of the thing. Mm-hmm. I really had to leave that to other people. Mm-hmm. But it's mm-hmm. an important thing. Mm-hmm. I've done quite a bit of my oldest son, my son, has done a doctorate in history on the politics of business in Otago up until 1890. And he amassed a huge amount of stuff, and a lot of it didn't get used in his thesis. And I've put a lot of that into a who's who in Otago up until about 1880 in the field of members of the Dunedin Club, run holders, and promoters of business, about 1,000 names with potted biographies of the lot, so that a lot of my reading has centered around that sort of thing. And even the Scots Magazine comes into that, because the city of Glasgow banks collapse in the 1870s, whatever it was, had wide ramifications here in New Zealand. And I don't think New Zealand people have remembered that. And probably the Scots have forgotten about it.
Maybe.
It's interesting, you know, reading the history of the Free Church. This settlement was promoted by the Lay Association, but the whole settlement only gets a paragraph or two in the histories of the Free Church, which says something about the significance of this settlement in their view of things.
Yes.
I've got a shelf full of Free Church history stuff.
Why do you think that is?
Well,
do you think the history of this settlement has been more keenly observed and written about here, from here, by New Zealanders?
I think Otago history is well written up by comparison with other parts of New Zealand. And there are reasons for that. I also think that in Scotland, there are still attitudes to colonials. I remember meeting, you better be careful that you don't publicise this too much, but I remember meeting the minister of St Giles and introducing myself as a minister from South Island of New Zealand, and I can still see him looking down his nose at me. I know what he was thinking.
Do you feel that then? Do you feel you're separate somehow then? Despite the long heritage.
That's only one incident. At the General Assembly, overseas visitors are introduced. You stand up one by one. After I had been introduced, at the next gap in proceedings, a number of people came and said, "Oh, you're from Otago." So on, so on, so on. Very well received. But I still have this vision of this gentleman looking down his nose at me.
The Scottish churches, one thing that struck me about them is that they have gone widely.
Oh,
they're
very
always
wide.
Have. To all arts and fairs.
That's right.
If you like.
That's right.
And have had an influence in a lot of different places.
Yes.
But, of course, we see that from the Scottish centre. I just wondered what it's like to
out here. Well, when we had special celebrations, the moderators come out here. James Matheson came when he was moderator of the Scottish Assembly, because he'd been minister at Knox Church before that, here in Dunedin. And we had Sandy MacDonald in 1998 when we had 150 years.
Do you have a separate authority here, though, or is it?
Ah, yes, it's
you do?
Presbyterian Church of New Zealand.
Of New Zealand,
yes.
Right.
Yes. Nowadays they stick Aotearoa in front of it to be PC and all that sort of nonsense.
Ah, yes, now you can't go anywhere very far in New Zealand without noticing that. Two languages.
Yes.
Have you ever wanted to learn Māori?
Well, unless you're actually working amongst them, what's the point of it? On the other hand, the three of my family work in Wellington in government departments, and they had to get on well with the Maoris. My older daughter is Deputy Secretary of Justice in charge of courts and tribunals, and she has to represent her department on Maori Marais, and she does that with you know, a proper attitude to the task she has.
But you haven't read yourself?
I've had no cause to.
A teacher self, if you like.
No. I didn't even learn enough English grammar to be very good at that sort of thing. But the others, they're very careful about it all.
Now, you mentioned the Scots magazine a wee while back there as being somehow significant to some of the work that you've done.
Oh, with yes. Regard to well, all sorts of things crop up. I'm not just, that's only one of many things I'm involved with. For example, years ago I was entrusted with a deed box or lap desk that belonged to old Daddy Auld. You know who I mean?
No, tell me.
The minister who had to reprimand Robert Burns and his Jean for their misdemeanours.
Oh, right. I know about that.
You know about that.
I didn't know the minister's name.
Yes. Well, old Daddy Owl, his lap desk, came out to New Zealand with friends of ours from Steps. And they lived in Timaru.
Just outside Glasgow.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And they all died off, and before the last one died off, I was asked to take this lap desk to the local Settlers Museum. They've since lost it, or lost track of it in it. And he didn't realise who old Daddy Old was. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a very good article on him in a reasonably recent thing. I was able to take that down to him and say, now, this is the man who owned this lap desk that I've given you to look after.
And lost.
And you've lost track of it. They've built a huge new storage place behind it. It'll come to light again. But yeah, that's just an example.
Right.
These sort of things crop up from time to time.
And do you keep your Scots magazine?
I do. I don't buy any particular binding things for them. They're dear enough as they go.
Are there any other Scottish publications then that you've bought more recently, apart from that?
Yes, I bought a large book of Scottish views. I don't know who it's by now, but I don't think my wife knows that I've bought it yet. It's up on the top shelf. And also a book on Scottish castles that recently came out, that type of thing.
Now, but where do you buy them from?
There's a university bookshop.
Ah, right.
And you can indent these things. Other times you pick them up in importers' leftovers, or what they call them, remainders.
Right. Oh, I see.
Yes. That way I don't have to pay
too much, because they can be expensive.
Well, that's right, and I wouldn't buy them.
I have noticed that books are quite expensive in New Zealand.
Yes.
Do you ever frequent any of the second-hand bookshops?
Oh, I not only frequent them, I supply them. Books that I have become superfluous to me. I have a shop that he gives me a good price for them, and from him I buy new ones.
Right, well, you see, that's not... You take them in and you replace them.
That's right, that's right.
I have noticed the numbers of these in Dunedin. It does seem to be quite a bookish place. Now, that may be because of the university.
No,
maybe other reasons.
It's not just the university. The relationship between the university and the city as a whole, there's about 20,000 tied up in tertiary education, but a lot of them are in a university setup, and you wouldn't know from what you see of them in the local community that they were here. That's not true of them all, because some are very outward looking. A lot of them are in a self-contained place here.
It's just that for quite a small city, well, a small centre anyway, I have noticed, because there's at least four, I think, second-hand bookshops.
Oh, is there? What, you're on at four.
There's more than that, is there? Four that I've seen.
Yes. There used to be one very good one called Newbold's, and you could, it was on four floors, or three, I forget which. And they had all sorts of things. For example, for a few shillings, I bought John Knox's History of the Reformation in Scotland. Now, I've never seen another copy of that. It's in display in the Heritage Centre now.
And gave it away then.
No, I've got my name with it still.
Donated it anyway.
It's on loan.
Right.
I'm not quitting that. And you could pick up
a find.
Well, these things could be found then. You won't find them nowadays unless the man doesn't know much about it.
Anything you bought recently, and what kind of areas would you be looking at when you go into one of these shops?
Not the novels, nor the science fiction. But I would look around in the technical side, and the New Zealand side, in the history, the biography.
Right. And what are you reading at the moment then, Reverend?
I've serious books. Telford's biography again, for about the third time.
Right, so you reread books?
Yes. Things like, what did I tell you? Alexander White, Alexander Carlyle, Blackie, Hugh Miller. Those ones I might have read four or five times. Yeah.
Right. So you keep favourites then?
Oh, I keep them, yes.
And when do you read?
Late at night.
A bedtime reader.
Yeah, I read quite a lot at that time. Other than that, the day is well taken up.
What about when you go on a holiday? What would you take with you then?
Oh, not much.
Right, so you don't read on holiday?
I rest my eyes.
Right.
Or read what's on somebody else's shelves.
So is reading then for you recreation, leisure? Or is it something you're doing to keep on educating yourself?
All three. Yes. All three.
I'm just wondering why you've never been tempted by fiction.
Oh, when I was working as a labourer on the building of the Roxburgh Hydro Dam, there was
when
no.
When was that?
Oh. 1953, 54, thereabouts.
Were you still a student then?
Yes, yeah. And that was in a community of about 400 men from all over the world. And there were no places where you could get any substantial books, so Baroness Oxley's Tartan Pimpernel and Hodder and Stoughton had a lot of yellow-backed things, and I went through umpteen of them.
And were they available to you then?
Oh, I could get them in a bookshop somewhere up there. I don't know where I got them from now.
You got married to a New Zealander, is that correct?
Yeah.
And How many children do you have?
Three.
Did you do as your father had done in encouraging your children to read? They've all turned out to do rather well for themselves. So.
Yeah, well, in Ashburton, where I was for 19 years, we were just 20 metres from the library. So they did well with reading, and they were read to when they were small. And then they've been encouraged to read, and they still read.
Were you read to when you were small? I mean, I know your father showed you the coloured plates.
I don't remember that. I don't think so.
Did you read to your children?
Dorothy did, yes.
Do you remember any of those stories? Were they familiar to you in any way?
Oh, Little Black Sambo and things like that weren't supposed to be read.
Yeah, well, Little Black Sambo is interesting because it was actually written by a Scottish woman.
Was it?
Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. But you're not allowed to read it these days.
Yeah. No, you're not.
It's not, which is ridiculous. But
was it part of your childhood?
No. Mm-hmm. No. You mentioning that, there was one American sort of classic that we read, I think, as children. However, it doesn't matter.
The Little House on the Prairie? Or?
That style of thing, but it wasn't that. Mm-hmm. And I think my sister read Little Woman. Mm-hmm. Or I don't even know what that's about. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did notice the other day when I was in Mosgiel that there was a Christian bookshop there.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about that?
No, I never frequent those places. No. Uh-huh. No.
So, in your book buying then, where are you doing that mostly? In the secondhand stores?
University bookshop, or Quick Calls, or Paper Plus, but I don't very often buy things there. There used to be a shop called the Otago Heritage Bookshop, and I bought far too much there, hundreds of dollars worth.
Are you addicted then to buying books?
Yes. Yes, that's an honest answer to a straightforward question. Yes.
That's a pleasure for you then, to own them.
I like to buy a book that's going to hold its value. Yes.
And how would you measure that value?
That it's worth rereading. That if somebody had to sell it, it would have some value. That's a very mercenary way of looking at it. But there are some books I have that, you know, would be worth $100 a piece. No trouble at all. Auctioned.
And do you ever sell them and sell them on?
Yes.
Is that an interest of yours too?
I'm not a trader. I'm just making space on shelves for...
for more.
That's right.
Do you read about rare books then?
Not greatly. If a catalogue comes my way, I look through it to see what's there. And my son does the same, and he might buy something for me in Wellington.
So you still get books as a gift?
Oh, yes.
More welcome than the Sunday school prizes.
Yes.
Did you ever have any influence then over when you were a minister, when you had a parish, over what the children got as Sunday
no,
school?
No, I kept well away from that.
Did you?
Yes. And not only that, the prize giving thing has gone out altogether.
Has it?
Here, yes. Oh. At least to the best of my knowledge, yes.
Well, that's rather sad from my point of view, because I've had a lot of mileage out of people telling me about their Sunday school prizes.
Yes. No, we haven't given prizes as they used to be given for years.
Is that the non-competitive instinct that's coming into
Oh, I think they might even have rationalized things by saying it's better to encourage children to give than to receive.
Fair enough, yes.
Yes.
I suppose really you've been very generous with your time. We should probably round things up now with just a couple of last questions.
Yes.
And could I ask you something that is quite difficult, but I'd like to hear what you think about it. And is that is if you could sum up for me what reading has meant in your lifetime.
Reading has meant a stimulus to further thought, a broadening of the mind, and a pleasure. Yes.
You could say more. And the last thing is, you're a New Zealander. Really, you were born here, although you've got Scottish parents. Do you feel that Scotland is in any way a part of your identity now?
Yes, I felt particularly when I got north of Wick that somehow I had been there before. And because I had heard my parents talking a lot about Orkney when they had Orkney friends and street names and places and people were already familiar.
Mm-hmm. Your parents did have then friends from Orkney.
Oh, yes,
come
yes,
to
yes,
the house.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Did they have an Orkney accent, by the way?
Oh, some of them did. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Your parents, then?
I don't think so.
No.
Mm-hmm. Don't think so. Not in the sense that some of them Orkney people do.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it was more standard Scottish?
Standard Scottish, mm-hmm. I think, yes.
Uh-huh. And you've picked a bit of that up, I can think.
Father used to talk about, instead of ch, which is an Orkney characteristic, mm-hmm. Pastor Cham.
Yes.
Chet Black Chade.
Have you ever been mistaken for a Scot?
Yeah. Oh, yes, quite often.
Mm.
And I was preaching at Caversham one time as a student, and afterwards half a dozen men came round and asked me, was I from the north of Ireland and was I a member of the Orange Lodge? And with the brashness of youth, I said, thank God I was neither. And they went away in a huff. Can't blame them. Years later, I had to look after that parish for about 3 years.
Mm.
I didn't have the courage to tell them that I'd already had an encounter with some. Unfortunately, their memory wasn't too good.
Well, good. Would you ever have been tempted to go back and minister in Scotland?
I would if the financial way was open to do that.
Mm.
I think I could manage that quite well over there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. I'm sure the parish would enjoy you over there.
I think I'd enjoy them too. There's nothing I like better. But you talk about going to a bookshop. I used to like going into a bookshop and ostensibly looking at a book, but listening to the conversation of the people around me and the different accents. And,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, I think we'll finish there.
I think that's about time to finish.
Thank you very, very much indeed for being so generous with your time. I've enjoyed talking with you this afternoon.
Yes, well, it's been very interesting talking to you too, and I hope it's not upended your researches too badly.
Yeah, I'm sure it would have.